Hey, folks, welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast. We are on with Bill. Tom, Bill, are you there?
Good evening, everybody.
And Scotty Goodall, are you there?
I'm here.
He's here. All right, where are we going this week? Bill, you want to take us on a journey?
Yeah, we can all talk a little bit about some of the things that we're up to. I got an interesting week that just passed. Just coming back from Florida. Picked up two brand new calls when I was down there getting ready for turkey hunting season.
Coming back from Florida, from the warmth to the cold with turkey calls. What did you get?
So two new mouth calls. I had to stop from buying half a dozen calls when I'm down there. I talked about in a previous podcast. Yeah. I like to go when I'm on trips and stuff like that and find new things that you can't find up here. And actually, I was in a Cabela's or Bass Pro Shop. I think Bass Pro Shop, and they had some calls that I had never seen. Reed calls, mouth calls, and I'm anxious to get them out and start practicing with them.
And you only bought two.
Well, I had my wife with me. She was kind of standing beside me.
I get that. On my choke tube fiascos when I was on that kick for a while, I'd be like, you need another choke tube? Another one? It looks cool.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what,
I mean, they had,
what brand did you get? Sorry.
They had some awesome box calls and slate calls too. And I refrained because, I've been looking at them for a while, but getting a brand new. I use a walnut based copper slate, and I've had it for years and years and years, and I love it. But I was down in Alabama, about 6-10 years ago, I guess now, and I found a call down there, and I fell in love with that one. So I have two that I really like, and they were both from two different places on my travels. And I didn't really think I could justify with my wife a third one sitting in the bag. So
can I ask, so what brand were they?
This one is called Tom Teaser's Custom Call Hillbilly Hen from Georgia. That was this one. It looks pretty cool. And then Woodhaven Custom Calls from Alabama.
Okay, put it in. Let's hear it.
Yeah,
I like it. Put him on the spot.
That came from you, did it, Scotty? I remember that one.
I like it. Well played, Scott. But we're waiting, Bill.
By the end of the call.
It was a southern call sound different than a northern call?
My wife said the same thing. She said maybe we'd be calling them Osceolas or some different type of turkey.
That's awesome.
All the turkeys up here be going, what the heck is that? They got a foreigner up in these woods.
they typically say that anyways when I'm calling.
The dead owl. Oh, there's that dead owl's back in the woods.
Yeah. You guys do a lot of reed calling when you turkey hunt?
I do. I always make fun of Dad and Scott. I'll let Scott answer right after I make this comment. But it's much like crossbows. I say that box calls, slate calls are for women, children, and it's, now I'm going to get mad. All the women on here are going to get mad at me. But no, I chirp them about their crossbows, and now I do the same because I say I in my own head think a mouth call is much more to master than scratching like your fingernails on a chalkboard.
Yeah,
I say that, but I do have slate call that I do use, and Dad's got a box call. Well, Scotty, what do you use? I don't get.
I have three reeds. I have three reeds, mouth calls, and one box call.
But you never have your mouth reeds in. At least when you meet up with us, they're not.
Was that? Sorry.
You never have your mouth reeds in, and when you meet up with us, unless you take it out, or maybe you do.
Yeah, I take them out, put them away. Yeah.
So where do you practice?
Right here in my house.
Yeah, you don't let the guys hear that. You put your reed call in. Let me hear that.
Well, I have my box call actually right beside me, but I don't have my reed. Hold on, I'll go find it.
So yeah, I got a reed. I got a slate too. I wanted a couple years ago at a big buck, the Rodney Big Buck and Outdoor Show. They were measuring. Frau was there, which measures Ontario trophies, whether it's sheds, bucks, or turkeys. And so I took my turkey in it, It came in still sits 16th in Ontario, but I won nice. That day with the largest turkey being weighed in, and not weighed in, but measured. And so I won a TS turkey stalker call, some mouth reeds. And so that slate call, it is pretty nice. So I do. I used it last year. Can't say that I did not.
I don't practice enough. That's the problem. I think it sounds good to me when I'm in the car going back and forth to work, but. And then I put it in the field, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it's just...
You know what? I'm going to go on a limb here, and I'm just going to throw this out because we are just genuine having a conversation that I don't think you got to be that exact and with a turkey call. I don't really don't. No. I think if you make some kind of noise, it's like a... you're good to go. I don't believe that you gotta be like NWTF championship turkey caller, yada yada yada. If you can make some kind of noise, you are good to go. They respond to thunder, they respond to crows to find where they are, but you want to pull them in, you just gotta get a little more finessey and just the now I say that, but I've also gone the opposite when you're sitting in the woods going, why isn't this freaking gobbler closing the gap? Why? And then you start going, okay, now is my call. And now you start the purring and the small putting and all that jazz to get it to go. And so I don't know. But I've always said to get them to respond in that, I don't think you got to be that accurate. I don't care if you got a box call, slate call, a mouth call, anybody that makes turkey calls going, yeah, right. Our turkey call sounds so perfect. You got to have ours. And maybe, but I don't know. I don't think that I'm the greatest mouth caller, but it seems to work. So, but I will say, first time I took my daughter turkey hunting, and I got it mounted. It's sitting up to, spoiler alert, we got the turkey. But I'm staring at it right now. That's why I say it. It's up on top of my fridge. But the first time I took her, I said to her, okay, I know where there's going to be a turkey roosted for sure. So Scott was going to, you went into your magical corner. Actually, you were going to come further, but there were some guys that we don't know how they got in there. We have a T word that we may pass around that I won't say, but they promptly left. But by then you had already just said, screw it. And you went back to your magic spot, right? Back into our corner. Yeah. So I took Megan and we had to go for it. And she's 12 at the time, which was, it was what, 2 years ago, Scott? So she would have been 10.
Yep.
And she's got juvenile arthritis. So I was nervous about walking her across the big field. And it was before we built our golf cart, the turkey chaser for my father. But she said, no, if you're telling me that we're going to hear a turkey, see a turkey, I'm in. So way we went, man, and we walked forever and I snuck her in, and it's a meadow that opens up in the middle of the woods. So there's woods on all the way around it. You got to go across a bunch of fields and these fields, it's just little fingers of woods here and there and everywhere, except for out in the middle, there's a good chunk of woodlot that separates four fields. And it's like a good set of woods, a little bit of swamp and a creek running through it. But right in the middle, it opens up to this unfarmed grassy meadow. And it's beautiful. The sun comes down through the trees into that meadow and it's just picturesque. But I knew that the turkeys were roosting there. They always do. And I said to her, okay, we're going to sneak in the morning and dark. We'll set up our blind on the edge of that meadow. And then we'll just let them know we're there. They'll come down and land in that meadow. Lights out. So in we go. I got a little blind that I stick in the ground that goes around us, like a little stakes, and it's like burlappy stuff around us. So I stick that down. We got a little loungy turkey chair she sits in, and I was sitting in my turkey vest that has a seat built in. And so we're just sitting there, and I'll be darned that just before first light, like clockwork, it was boom! So there it is. And now her eyes light up and I am pumped because my daughter just heard her first turkey.
Did you initiate the calls before you heard the gobbler? Or did it gobble?
You know what? I don't remember. I don't think we did. Because
I always wonder that on my own when I'm out there turkey hunting is, am I making the first move to initiate that gobble contact, initiating the hen waking up, or am I waiting for that gobble on roost and then calling back to it?
You know what? Where we hunt, we don't even get a chance, do we, Scotty?
No.
It's there's so many. I hate it, again. It sounds like I'm bragging. I'm not. It's the just the land that we're on, and it's the way that the land is set up. With the turkeys, love it because you got fields with fingers of woods, and then a good section of woods here and there that they roost up where they're safe in the corners, the little pockets of these fingers that come out, and so you know where they're gonna be. And when one sounds off. That's it. I mean, it's just there's 20 of them, and it's just a chain reaction, just for a kilometer, like forever, isn't it, Scott? Like it's just
oh yeah, it's insane,
it's crazy, and it will just echo and just knocks the next one, and it will just hit them for a kilometer away. They're still sounding off, and the minute that last one finishes, that first one's already started again, and so for that us,
puts a smile on your face.
And it is. I mean, like, you know, they're there without. I mean, there's been like the one or two times where we've gone in and not had a gobble. And I'm like, what the heck? Because it is. You don't have to make a sound. And usually by the time I'm setting up and I'm getting everything, they're gobbling by the time I get set up.
Yep. By the time you're done setting up, they're gobbling already.
By the time you're just about to put your butt down on that ground, they're hammering it. And we maybe should get in a little bit earlier. But maybe we're not that punctual, but they are.
We're still a half hour before daylight, legal shooting or whatever, 40 minutes. But yeah, they start going crazy.
Yeah. And we've really never had to worry about who makes that first call, right? Like it's just, they're there. And so I knew it gave Megan that slate call and maybe Grandpa's box call. I had a little gobble shaker. I had my mouth read in and just gave it to her so that she could play if she wanted to. But when that guy gobbled, I mean, I was cognizant because it was it's that master question that you've asked a while ago is how much do you call? Right. How little do you call? Do you just let them know you're there? And what's going to make them when they come down, come to you? Or walk away.
Yep, that's $1 million question. I'm hoping to figure that out this year.
Yeah, and good luck, man. Because
yeah, no,
for 20 years I ain't figured it out.
I was gonna say I've been saying that preseason every year. I'm hoping to figure that out this year, and nope. Yeah. Another season comes and goes, and I haven't really got it figured.
No, I couldn't tell you. And so when that gobbler gobbled, I mean, Megan's eyes lit up and I just was like, that's awesome. That's successful right there. Cause now she finally got to hear what I've been talking about and not just on TV, right? Watching a hunting video. It's there and there's nothing in this world that compares to when you're within 100 yards of a gobbler and he lets loose and it will light you up.
And that's my opinion too. And taking a new hunter hunting. I think it's just me, maybe talk about a little bit, but most of the new hunters that I've brought out have been for turkey hunting I know the excitement I get when I hear that gobble and it's there. And now we're hunting something that's actually around. And I'm not saying that deer hunting is different. I mean, I guess duck hunting is equally as, interactive with the animal, with hearing them, the birds, seeing them from long piece off. But you're right, nothing beats sitting there first thing in the morning and hearing within close enough distance that gobble coming from the tree, and it's like game on.
Yeah,
smile comes out and we're ready.
And you know, because your odds just increased exponentially when you hear that, because now if you can hear it, what you're hunting is within earshot. When you're deer hunting, it quite possibly what you're hunting is within earshot, but you don't have a clue.
Right.
Right. But with turkeys, when you hear that, now this is why you're there. And so for a new hunter, when they sit there and it's gobble, it's like, holy crap, we might actually see one. We might actually shoot one. Like, this is something. So Megan, I'll tell you what, she was pretty pumped up. And so I was, she says, can I play with the car? I said, you go to town and I want you to enjoy this and me not be that super serious hunting dad that, you know, oh, I don't want to go. Dad takes it too serious. So, so she was, every time that she touched off on that call, that gobbler let loose. And I mean, it wasn't like every 5 times she called. It was every freaking time. He was jacked, but he wouldn't. He went down in the woods, didn't come down into the field, went down into the woods, and I didn't see him, but my gosh, he was just gobbling for 3 hours. And she got so used to it. I look over and she's not calling anymore. So I'm like, okay, she stopped calling, which is good. We'll wait and see if that's going to make him come in. Cause I didn't want to dictate, you know, this, that, or anything else. And I can't say again, she's never used a turkey call in her life. And he was responding. So that kind of backed up my theory that you don't got to be a professional caller unless she's just naturally good and I should get her in some tournaments. Calling
competition. Yeah. You know, maybe she's a prodigy.
Maybe yeah. She's
a natural.
Maybe she's unreal. Yeah. It's like Mozart or whatever. She can just do it because she's heard it before. But anyway, so I look over and she's out because I'm thinking, hey, she hasn't called in a bit. And he would gobble every now and then and she's out cold. And so I would just scratch on the slate call here or there, give a little tweak with my mouth call, trying to get him to close the gap. He was probably for 3 hours, and I've never had a turkey do this, for 3 hours, he stayed about 200 yards away. There was 100 yards across that meadow, and he was probably another 100 yards, if I had to guess, in the woods. And he just walked back and forth the whole time. And 3 hours is a long time when he's gobbling. And it got so normal. He was gobbling so much that Megan just went to sleep. And I'm like, oh my gosh, when you got a turkey gobbling, how can you go to sleep?
Yeah.
What is going on? So when she went to sleep, I tried a few different things, nothing. And I finally got so frustrated. 3.5 hours. I'm just like, okay, if I was by myself, I could have grabbed my little bought and stock decoy and started heading across that meadow trying to close the gap. But with Megan with me, I thought, okay, I'm going to try something different. And I grabbed my call and I just started nonstop. And I'd stop eating. I could just keep going. But literally, I bet you for 3.5 minutes, I did not stop calling only to let him gobble. And I'll be darned, that gobble was getting closer all of a sudden. And so then guys will also say, don't call too much. Let me tell you, for 3.5 hours, we didn't call too much. He was gobbling, a gobbling, a gobbling, a gobbling, a gobbling. But when Megan went to sleep and I thought, okay, I'm making something happen because I can't do this any longer. I did not. And that, it was the turning point. He started, once I realized, holy crap, those last 3 gobbles are getting closer. He's coming. I reached over and shook Megan's leg, and then I put my hand on her chest as she went to wake up, to wake her up and grabbed her shirt, kind of shook her a bit so that she didn't jump up because she was asleep, and I didn't want her to scare anything.
Come up swinging or something.
Yeah, so I held her down and kind of shook her. So she woke up with me pressing down, and he gobbled, and her eyes went big as saucers because now he's there, and that was a close gobble. And so she just starts whispering to me, shoot him, Dad, shoot him, shoot him. We can't even see him yet, Megan. Yeah. Shoot him, Dad, shoot him, shoot him. So I just sat, my mouth call really light, just... Well, next then I could see him coming right towards the meadow, and there was a big log jam straight across from us on the end where like they've stacked a whole bunch of cut logs and stuff at the end of the meadow that is directly across. And like I said, it's about 100 yards. Well, he crested into that meadow and Megan could not. She was on her knees now beside me. Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. Megan, he's too far. That's 100 yards. Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. Well, now the pressure was mounting so much now because all that's going through my mind is we went from what I felt was a successful hunt of Megan being able to hear that turkey gobble for the first time. That, yes, that's going to get her hooked. Now I've got him. You can see him. And if I don't make this shot, if I miss, oh my gosh. No offense, Bill. If you've listened to the other podcasts,
Bill has had a tear running down the corner of my eye right now.
But all I'm thinking about is, holy crap, don't miss. And so he come in and he got to about 65 yards. And I didn't know that. I'm looking at him going, and I've taken shots. I've killed turkeys at over 70. But I'm looking and I'm thinking, man, he's still a ways. Is that 80 yards? You know, I can't really tell. But I've got my gun up now and I'm holding it. And Megan is just in my ear. Shoot him, Dad. Shoot him. Shoot him, Dad. Shoot him. Shoot him. And so I'm holding it on him. And instead of keep coming, he turns and he's walking now in front of that big brush pile, and he's cutting the backside of that meadow. He's cutting off. He's going to, and he's going to go in the woods right across it. And I'm thinking, if he goes in the woods, he might try to come up and take a better look, but he just might walk away. Yeah. And so it's now or never. And so I'm thinking, holy crap, this. And now, I mean, it, I'll tell you, I've shot a lot of turkeys, not toot my own horn, but the pressure for this particular turkey was untouchable by any other turkey I've shot, just because Megan was there. This was 3.5 hours of calling and him gobbling. And now here's the chance that I got to take this shot, because he's not coming closer, but he may if he goes in the, but I'm not taking that chance. So I put it on him. I'm on my knees just over top of my little blind that sticks in the ground, and I'm holding it on him. And I thought, okay, I said, are you ready, Meg? Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. And I'll be darned if he didn't drop start doing the funky chicken. And Megan, if there was turkey hunters in the area, they might as well packed up their crap and went home, because she was, woo, yeah, we got him, we got him. She was just halfway across that field screaming and jumping and hooting and hollering. I don't know if you could hear her, Scott, where you were. But
no, I was way far away.
You were a ways away. You heard my shot, but.
Yeah, I heard the shot.
She was cranked. Eh? She grabbed my cell phone, had to call grandpa, and down he went. So I had my range finder, and I ranged him. And I think what, Scott, he was 67 yards.
Yep.
I think
yep.
is what I said. He was 67 yards, and he
That's dropped, a long shot.
Dropped dead in his tracks on the spot. And I'll tell you, I was nervous pulling that trigger, because I thought, man, if I miss and he takes off, oh, I'm just going to feel like crap. But
she wouldn't let you live that down.
No, and she's my personality. So on the sarcasm and the needling, you're darn straight. It would be a lifelong deal for me.
But you did well. And has she been out with you since?
I don't know.
Deer hunting a lot.
Yeah, she did deer hunting. I don't know if she got out. Now she's 12 and has her own phone and is now in that social circle. It's getting a little bit. It's going to be a little bit tougher, I think. I know.
That's right.
Even convincing her. She did go deer hunting, but convincing her to go deer hunting when there's so much more going on is.
Yep, I know that exact thing. I'm fighting that right now. Not fighting it, but it's a deal. My 6-year-old is more excited about going hunting with me than the person that 16-year-old that has a license and, is able to get her own tags and stuff like me in the bush.
Yep.
Yeah. But,
it's a phase, I think, that we're all going to go through.
Oh, I went through it.
Kids are growing up and stuff, right?
Yeah, well, I did.
True.
I didn't care to hunt at 15. I would like, yeah. I mean, after 15 to 16, so I can't remember. It was, but yeah, I get it. And I believe, like, nowadays with all the other distractions of your social media, the TikToking and the Snapchatting and all that, that there's so much going on in their social world. That at any given time, it's, I'm going to the mall. Can I go to the mall with my friends? And blah, 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 blah. And it, like there's 15 different people bugging you to do something now on these things.
That's right.
So I'm only thinking it's going to be even tougher. Now I might have to be the jerky dad and mandate it. And then she'll never hunt again. So yeah. I'm cognizant of such. But try to get her to go to the gun club too. And she works out there. She likes getting paid. She's, if I come, can I work? Well, no, this is a practice. I want you to shoot. Nah, no, I'm good then. Oh, man. So I lose that battle now too. But she'll go if there's money involved. But anyway, with the call in and that, that's it. Just, I wanted to share that just to back that up, that with really, I don't think that you got to be that perfect on a turkey call.
And I totally, I have a similar story that, I took my nephew and, I had a blind set up, and so we head out to the woods. And as we get into the woods, we can see the blind, but we can also see turkeys running past the blind. So we scared them out of there.
Oh, and I really thought that was right there. Right. Yeah.
And it's the last day of the year.
The last day of turkey season.
Yep. And so we finally, it's the first time Michael's ever hunted. So I went, all right, let's go sit in the blind anyways. But I'm really thinking this is a big waste of time. I even told him this was a big waste of time because the turkeys have already run away.
Oh, there's positive Uncle Scott for you. The glass half full, everybody.
That's right, right?
Yeah, let's go be bored out of your skull, Michael. Hunting sucks, by the
for
way.
A couple hours on the last day. That's right. So I have a backpack full of calls, right? I have a gobble call, a shaker call. I have my mouth reeds. I have a slate call. I have a box call. And we're sitting there for about, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes. And Michael says, hey, show me what all these things do. So I get this slate call out and I show him how to use it. And so I give it to him and he tries it.
Wait, it sounds horrible,
right?
How did that go?
Yeah, you heard it. So then I get the shaker call out and we shake the crap out of that for a little while. And then the mouth call. And of course, you can imagine what your first time with a mouth call sounds like. And then, so we get the box he's call like out and we
choking and gagging on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, right.
You sound like a cat throwing up.
Exactly. So we're so focused and we're talking a normal voice level. And, because I really didn't think anything was ever going to come back. And we look out the window and there's a turkey at like 35 yards standing there, staring at us, didn't make a noise. Wondering what the heck's going on in that blind. And we shot that turkey. And then Michael, I run out of the blind and he goes, Uncle Scott. I said, what? He says, can I come too? I said, heck yeah, let's go. So this thing's flopping on the ground, right? And it's his first kill ever. He has never seen anything like this. And he looked devastated. And I looked at him and I said, hey, buddy, you got to celebrate now. Woohoo! And then he goes, he didn't know what to do at first. And then he started celebrating. And then he says, I have to call my Nana. So he had to call my mom to tell him that we had shot a turkey. But out of all that racket that we made,
that Tom
there was
came
no
in.
Way I would have ever thought a turkey would come back.
The Tom would be coming in. That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was insane.
That's incredible. that all worked out. Yeah, I got similar. And I don't know if it's luck or what it is, but when we were hunting with PP and to get his first bird, we tried and worked a long time to do a lot of wrong things. But the one day that we went out there, you're talking about calling, and I'm not one for the gobble shock, like the shock gobble, whatever you call that, shaker the gobble
shaker thing. Call.
Yeah. You know what? It's always been one of those things that I've just thought it doesn't sound right to me. But we were, funny thing, we were in this little block of bush and we were driving around because we typically hunt first thing in the morning and then we'll go for breakfast. This is when we hunt with another friend of ours down in Simcoe County. So this particular morning we get up there, and I think it was the second day. First day we didn't see much. We got kind of skunked, but we heard a lot of birds. Second day we get out, first thing in the morning, see nothing, go for breakfast, going around a couple of different farms a buddy of ours has permission for. And sure enough, on the other side of a bush lot, two toms full strut right out in this field. So we parked the truck on the opposite side of that bush lot.
Get out the 243, line the scope up across it. Yeah. I'm kidding, folks. I do not condone poaching.
Everybody listening, Todd is not serious.
Just making sure y'all are still listening, that's all.
Yeah. So we get out of the truck and we work a plan with the three of us there. And I'm the one that does most of the calling because at this point in time, these guys were kind of new to the turkey hunting calling. So I had my recalls in and we go through this bush set up and I could still hear these birds calling on the opposite side because I gave a few locator type calls and called again. And oh, here they come. They're coming closer. Now I'm getting excited and Pee-Pee's turn to shoot. So I left the gun in the truck. Didn't want to steal his thunder, but this bird, two of them start coming through the bush lot, and now I'm calling, and they're getting closer, and all of a sudden, our buddy, I won't mention his name on the podcast, takes his gobble shocker out, goes, with a gobble shocker. I'm like, what are you doing? These two birds are coming in cold state, straight across, no problem.
They weren't even hesitating.
They were coming in 100, like right to my calls, coming right in. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he takes a gobble shock call out. And I'm like, great, gone. These two birds, I'm thinking they're gone. No, sure enough, I get on the calls a lot more aggressively now after he does that.
You're covering up that.
Try to save it somehow. And sure enough, these birds come in, and now you can hear them putting and strutting, and when they fluff right out, you hear, and the noise they make when that drum when starting to, oh man, my heart's going 90, you know, beating. And from my perspective, I could see we kind of lined up in a semi half horseshoe type deal where Peepee was actually worked out good because they came closer to him than the other three of us that were kind of in line there. And he couldn't see them though, because there was a big log that cut across where I had perfect view of these two birds coming in, and they hung up on this log for, I don't know, a minute and a half, where they just came back and forth. I'm like, why are you shooting? And I'm cutting their calling a little bit with the mouth calls, calling, and they gobble back. And sure enough, they got to a point where he could make a shot in one shot, 40 yards, and that bird dropped like a stone. But you know, the whole thing, that was when we weren't the almost guys, and that actually worked out to be an actual, yeah.
I was waiting. I thought, there's no way that you guys actually got these birds.
And that was the last bird that we had got for quite some time, to be honest with you. So,
how is the bird population up there? Up where you
are? Well, it's funny. It's a good thing. I mean, it used to be 5 years ago great. And I'm hunting in a Barry area. This was actually in Simcoe, Cayuga area, where we were hunting with Peepee there. When the birds were all over the place. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing gobbles and seeing birds in fields, and you know, the strutting around with hens and that sort of stuff. But last year we went down to Simcoe for opening day and didn't do quite so well at all. I mean, we had birds, but we had more hens and toms, so it was. It's odd what cycle that they may be in down there. But
see, yeah, and I don't see where we are near St. Thomas. It's there's never an off cycle, is there, Scott? Like the rumor is,
seem to be.
Yeah, you could swing a dead cat and kill a turkey. Is what's been told to me.
Yeah.
I don't know who came up with that saying, but
up Barry, you know where I'm at. I used to see birds a lot more, but then I'm starting to see a lot more coyotes now.
Yeah, too, one, so. That and harder winters.
We're seeing that.
Harder winters up there, but yeah, we're getting a lot of coyotes. I'm going to tell you, the coyotes are pretty healthy around here.
Yeah.
But this year, the winter being as, it wasn't as harsh. Like, I can see my grass now. I had plus 10 temperatures for the last couple of days. You know, it was zero today, but it's kind of an unnatural, naturally warmer winter, so
yeah.
I'm expecting birds to have survived more. The beards are going to be longer.
Well, I'm going to be nervous as
snow.
I always say to Scott, an early spring for us means bad turkey hunting because they
horrible turkey hunting.
They go into breeding season too early. By the time our season opens up, they're on their last. Right? They don't care to come in, and we got to work harder. We got to get more inventive.
Yeah, well, that's right.
You go change your paradigm and go out there and make something happen.
That's right. That's right. Got to have fun. Yeah. Yep. No doubt.
So it's good. Yeah. I guess we're getting real close to turkey hunting season now. And I see it on Facebook too. I guess down south, there's already seasons that have started.
No, down where you just came up from, right? Down Georgia, Florida, they're already shooting them.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes it'd be nice to take a road trip down there to see if we can hunt something a little bit earlier in the year.
Oh, you know what? We used to hit that, and I shouldn't say used to. It probably don't go as much as we used to go, but we still hit it. But there is the Bass Pro in Auburn Hills, Michigan, and there is an older gentleman that worked there, and he worked in the clothing department every time I go, and he seemed to be there every time I went. And I don't know. I tried to totally understand the gig. He was a little bit vague in some of his stories. I mean, he was an older gentleman at that time, and I haven't seen him for a few years that we've gone back. But they have mounts all in that clothing area up along the top of the wall. And apparently those are all his, where he is gone and shot them. And he wasn't a professional hunter,
but he was a dedicated hunter. And so he had told me the one time I was in there talking to him about base layers and all this stuff, and he was giving me the what for and what I should buy. He was explaining to me about how, why it came about, because he was telling me that, you know, he would layer up, and then in some areas it's so cold when you start in the morning and then you're sweating by midday that he would take it. And we got talking that he had done the Grand Slam of turkeys. He had shot every species of turkey, and they were all in that Bass Pro mounted. And next time I go, I'm going to be more cognizant and take a look. But I remember that I remember thinking that would be cool to be able to go and shoot a Merriam, and then to go shoot an Osceola. We are shot Easterns where we are, right? So I just thought it would be wicked to be able to go and shoot all these different species and the different climates and the different terrains.
That's right.
Minus the snakes down in Georgia, Florida way, but
there that, what is it, the Gould? I think that's the one of the Grand Slam birds.
That's the Mexico down in Mexico, right? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's a bit neat looking bird, but chances of me going hunting in Mexico are slim to none.
I hear you. I hear you. Yep. No. So what else you got going on, Bill? What are you doing? What are you doing lately? We are coming up to Turkey, but we're still a ways away. So you're practicing calling. What else you got going on?
Yeah, a little silly. I started after 2 years thinking it would be a good idea to do some workouts for trap shooting.
Wait a minute.
So you're eating more.
Ladies and gentlemen, we did not even again, this is a candid conversation, but that's the funniest thing that I think I've heard on 14 episodes of this podcast. I've got heart palpitations right now. It hurts. You're started working out for, just Scott nailed it, by eating?
Potato chips, pepper heads, pig chips, pepper heads.
I wish I could say that's what I'm doing, man. I decided to take a different route, Mr. Goodall.
Oh, that is so anybody that doesn't know why we're laughing is because some of the top trap shooters are way upwards of 300 plus pounds. Easy. Not that that's
more stable
a bad thing.
We are.
And yeah, they're stable. They pull the trigger. They don't move. I mean, you get a windy day, they don't care. You got to tether me down to the score table. but that's why we're laughing. And I should expound upon that even more, because we've had this conversation, haven't we, Scott? With the fitness side. So I've gone and done this again. I'm not tooting my own horn, because, and I'm going to back up the theory, but I've gone and done the coaching certification for shotguns here in Canada. We have a federally recognized curriculum, and there's not many because it's still in its infancy. And so they had a book. It was kind of built from the rifle, because the rifle's been around, and then they redid it. They had a shotgun one, but they got rid of it, and then they redid it. And if you want funding from the federal government, if you want to be able to compete in like the Can-Am games and Pan-Am games and stuff like that, it needs to be federally recognized sport. In order for it to be a federally recognized sport, you have to have a certified coach that is part of the NAACP, the National Coaching, blah, 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 blah. And so I've gone and taken this. I was asked to take it. So I became a coach, and then the learning facilitator side, which is then create a coach. So I've done this. Part of this curriculum, we took the book, and I mean, it's been rewritten, but we adjusted it and stuff like that while we were there doing it, and had, because we were one of the first coming through after this next time, like this new version and everything else. And it, again, some of it had been adapted from rifle, and we're like, that doesn't make any sense. But the section that I wanted to rip out, and everybody, I'm taking it, and I'm taking it with the people that are going through for the rifle certification, coaching certification. I'm taking it with the people that are, because day one is all mixed, right? It's all gun club safety, etiquette, all that stuff. And I'm in there with the handgun people. And in this section is nutrition and exercise. and they want you to teach nutrition. And I just started, I'm like, okay, from the shotgun guy, put my hand up, from the shotgun side guys, we've got to remove that section. And they all looked at me like, what? I'm like, I'm sorry. But if I go back and I tell anybody, any shotgun sports dude at a gun club, look, I need you guys to start. And if you want to be a better shooter, you got to watch your diet. You know, you got to start doing some laps at, I'm going to get laughed out of the gun club, out of the whole,
league. Conversation.
Really, I mean, and Scott's laughing because it's the truth. And so, and really I say all that, but the certification is, I don't want to make light of it, but to be honest, in the shotgun world, I can look at what this book tells you. And I mean, you build a base, but you still got to be comfy and you still got to do it yourself. And this is just a disclaimer so I don't get beat up by others. But do I think that I'm more intelligent or a better shooter or more, I don't know, acclimated to give lessons and such because of that certification? Absolutely not. I can look at somebody that this book would argue that that is the exact wrong type of stance, and I can watch, they're a great shooter, watch them run 100 and win a shoot. So to me, there is no right or wrong. It's just what works for you. There is basics to build up, but that being said, I had to make that disclaimer because I know some people listening are like, yeah, shotgun certified, yeah, whatever kind of thing. And I agree, I'm with you because I've seen some really wacky, what I think are wacky stances, and they destroy me. So there are no right or wrong, but that killed me that in this book it was nutrition. And I came back to the gun club and I'm like, guys, look, there's nutrition, you got to watch your diet. And again, some of the best top trap shooters are very, very big dudes. So now, Bill, when you say I'm working out to get in, I'm getting ready for the trap shooting season, it does. I think I peed a little bit. So you've been working out. So you used to work out though. Like, we're bull riding champ, 2011 bull riding. I keep saying it every podcast because I'm so proud of you, buddy. But number one in Ontario, top five in Canada, you had to work out back then.
Oh yeah, I did P90X. I was in the best shape of my life back then. Well, that's not true. Best shape of my older years.
But you've done running as well. Like even up to like a year ago or so, you and Candace enter into marathons and all that stuff.
Still,
I have a couch and a TV, so you won't catch me in one of those.
No marathons. We did 10K mud runs. Don't oversell it.
I want to do those. I don't know about the 10K part, but I want to do the mud run.
You do like half a K.
Well, no, I want to use my truck. I like those kind of mud runs.
Yeah, we do. We did 2 a year. We did Hell in the Harbor, which is a Hamilton run around the harbor type deal for Special Olympics and they raise money for that, and it's a great cause. We don't take any of this stuff seriously. We go out to compete and to complete and have a good time with my wife. And we actually brought my son out last year for the second run that we did, which was Mud Hero 10K. And again, I'm not a top time guy. You see people there that are competing for chances to make nationals. No. I enjoy the finish, the competition, bettering my time from last year and
that
being
is,
able to complete every obstacle.
That is not the Bill Tom that I know.
Because it's running. Because it's, you know, I'm not going out there to be a top 10 in the country marathon.
You, mud runner. If you're not first, you're last, Bill. So,
well, but that's why I run in advance, because I don't want to go out there and half hard. I want to do the best I can. And the best I can is finishing every obstacle, being competitive, bettering my time from last year, and not dying halfway through and looking for a sandwich or something. But so it fast forward to why I'm training for trap shooting.
Okay.
You've
seen me on the line and now you're like, well, it's not just about breaking targets. It's about looking good. So I got to compete with that. I got to go hit the gym.
132 pounds of you. But I got doing dry fire drills here and my arms are tired. and I don't shoot a heavy gun, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. There's no way that after, you know, 15, 20 minutes worth of dry fire drills, and I'm not constantly having the gun up, but it's going through the process.
You're not waiting for four other people to shoot either, right?
That's right.
Let me tell you, I shoot by myself. That gun's heavy at the end of that 25.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I don't like it.
No, my gosh. Even two people, you're starting to feel it.
Yeah.
And then
maybe that's part of it too. You try to talk me out of working out?
Oh, no, by all, hey. You're just the reason why it made me laugh. I say all power to you. Because I believe it could, I mean, it gets oxygen in the blood. It gets things flowing and moving, right? And I mean, why wouldn't it help? Absolutely.
Yeah, I felt pretty good last night after round one. I mean, again, I'm just getting back into it, and we'll see after 3 weeks how I feel. But day one, workout one this morning, I had a hard time putting my shirt on because my arms and chest hurt so much.
What did I say? Does it feel like you just breastfed a lion?
Yes.
It's chest and dry days.
Oh, yeah, it was tough. But we'll see. I'm hoping it's going to help us with the stamina for doing the longer shoots, I guess, and stay on the line for, you know, from start to end. And if anything is going to fail, I'm hoping it's not my body that fails.
And you know, you might not be wrong. I read a Facebook thing a long time ago that it asked that question. Should I work out if I want to shoot shotgun sports, blah, blah, blah. And everybody was making fun of the guy. But I think I chimed in and I said, well, here's how I look at it. Cause I work out at Monday through Friday, but I said the concentration level that it takes for that 10 seconds, 20 seconds of rep time, if you're really going hard and you're really working out properly, is the same type of concentration I want to exert just as I'm about to yell pull, call for the target. So I try to keep my mind in that thought process while I'm doing it, because it was that focus. I'm working on my mental focus, because again, shotgunning it's all mental. Once you've established it's, I don't know, 10% physical, and the rest, it's all mental. So that's my theory. I made that and the gentleman, he commented back and said, well, that's a really good point. I'm going to keep working out. Well, don't make you go to the gym. That's just what I make my mind go to while I'm doing it, is that focus. I want to focus. So, and I figure if I can focus on doing something so physically, like exertion on that time frame, on that 10 seconds, I should be able to do it for 2 seconds before I yell pull.
Yep.
So that's my thought process on it, but it's more work in the mind than the muscles. But I mean, you're at the gym, you might as well work the muscles.
And as much as Scott doesn't believe it, I am enjoying doing the dry fire drills every other night.
I don't get it.
I'm with you, Scott. I shouldn't say it, because I tell you what, I believe it. I believe it's a good thing, and I wish I could make myself do it.
You know, if nothing else, it's going to make you mount the gun the same every time, right? Muscle memory.
And it's got, and something else that I've read, or somebody's told me way back in the day, is it's going to keep your mind on shooting targets. I've heard people say, even if you're not shooting targets, you should be. If you want to be that serious of a competitor, you should be shooting targets in your mind all day long. You should be thinking about it. You should be living, sleeping, breathing it. So yeah.
I'm hoping to find a balance quickly between, you know, the dry fire and actually getting out there, seeing targets break and learning that target fish. We've talked about this a lot over the last little while, because I've been bothering you to no end about questions that are going through my head. But but no, it's now taking this and applying it is the next phase, I think. And this, now that the weather's starting to get a little bit warmer here, I'll be out of the club on Saturday and trying to put it all into practice to action, right? So
yeah, right on. We have our last league shoot this Sunday at our home club. Yeah. Our home club is hosting it.
How's that been going?
Oh, let's not talk about it. It's been a joyful experience.
It's a positive spin to put on that.
I love hanging out with all the guys. Honestly, everybody, it's a blast. you know, we get there and I'm just nonstop mouth going. I like to perform and I like attention anyway, as most can tell. But we get there and I'm just nonstop. You get to see everybody you haven't seen in a week or so, and I get to chirp, chirpity, chirp, chirp, and have fun. I absolutely love that.
You shooting too, Scott?
Did we lose?
Are you shooting as well, Scott? We lost Scott.
We lost Scott. I'm going to call him back.
Hello.
Scott.
Hello. What happened?
You hung up on us.
No.
We're so offended. It was like, oh, it's 8:20. It's past his bedtime.
Absolutely.
You had a hard stop there. That just.
He's like, screw you guys. I'm out. we were just saying, I said, I don't know when you kicked off, because I'm like, Scotty. But I was just saying.
I sent you a message instantly.
Oh, did you really? Oh, I just got it. I just got disconnected somehow. Yeah, right. I like that. I was just saying to Bill that this Sunday is our last league shoot in the Southern County Inter Club at our home club. And he said,
this point.
He says, and how's that go for you? I said, let's not talk about scores. I said, I'll tell you what, I love performing. I love attention. I had a blast going out to the gun club and getting to see the guys I haven't seen in a week and chirping everybody and walking around. And I absolutely have a fantastic time. And I don't ever equate a good shoot to scores unless I win. But so lately, not at all. So I always equate it anyway. And Dad's always said after a big shoot, you know what? That was an awesome shoot. And I'm like, Dad, you sucked crap. No. We put our chairs out under our tent there and they weren't empty the whole weekend. There was somebody sitting, and that's how Dad judges how good a shoot is.
Yeah, that's right.
And to me, that's the same in this Inter Club. Honestly, it is. It's a blast because all the guys there, there's 120 guys, but they're all local from our, there's five clubs around, right? From all of our local clubs that we get to see all summer. But now we shoot against them in the win, and it is just a blast. And nobody takes it real serious. So I get to just chirp, chirpity, chirp, chirp. And they can't punch me because they might lose their gun license. So I just go.
Does each club host one event throughout the wintertime?
We hit each club twice. There's 10 shoots.
Oh, each club twice, yeah.
Yeah, so there's 10 shoots. We hit each club twice. You get to throw out two scores. They got prizes for all kinds. We got a banquet in April? I don't even know when it is.
Yep, we do. It's in April.
It's in April. Yep, banquet, big award banquet where they call you up and hand you the prize that if you won one. And they have the 5-man team from each club, the top 5 shooters after those 8 scores have been calculated from each club. They got the singles, the handicap, and the high overall. And it's done right. And it is an absolute riot.
Keeps you going through the winter months too, right?
And it does. Yeah, even though it's freezing, stinking cold out there. And some days
it frustrates you. If you don't shoot as good in the winter.
Yeah, you absolutely don't. I mean, and you can't even on a nicer day when you think, well, this is nicer, you still don't. And who knows why? I've had somebody just said to me 2 weeks ago, I shot a bad score maybe 3 weeks ago, and they said, well, you're slower because you've got all those clothes on. Well, I layer up, so I'm not super puffy, but I do have like 5 layers on, right? The Under Armours, the base layers and all that. And you're slower, and then your eyes... They said your eyes don't focus as quickly because it's cold, and like there's all these different theories going and really? Going that justify why you shoot bad scores.
And we'll take every excuse there is.
Yeah, and I mean,
frozen targets.
Frozen targets. That's one really you hear, works. Right? That they get frozen, then they melt or they thaw a little bit, and then they get soft, and the pellet will go right through them without chipping them. Because
dad would say that too.
I think that's dad's theory.
Yeah. He said, I picked up targets with holes in them and they didn't break.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's lots of those out there, but more so dad's theory is such. Last week, it was a nice, was it last week or the week before? It got a little bit nicer out and people were just shooting bad scores. And that was dad's theory that the targets were frozen and then they've unthawed. They had moisture and they unthawed or something. I don't know. You'd have to ask him and get his theory on it. But yeah, the pellets they're not chipping the target. They're just going right through it. And the target keeps on moving. Like there was some there that there was so much dust on. One of them, one guy stopped on one I shot at
guy stopped the whole squad and he said, did anybody see a piece off that? And I'm shooting it. I said right away, I did not. I'm shooting it. And he's like, no, Todd, I've never seen that much dust come off a target like that. And no chip. I'm like, I didn't. And nobody, nope, nobody did. No, loss. And then we went over to the handicaps and another buddy of mine shooting beside me. I stopped because he had the same thing. So much dust off the bottom of that target. It was crazy. And like, you could physically see it. Like, you see a little bit. This was a lot. Like, there was so much. And didn't break. Didn't see a chip. And I was staring. I'm looking. Didn't see a chip. And I think that's exactly what it was. That's what Dad said. Well, yeah, these targets were, they got a little bit of moisture frozen. Now they're softer and they're thawing, blah, blah, blah. And that was his theory that pellets hit that sucker. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Just not hard enough to break it because a few pellets went through it. So
yeah. So after Interclub, what's next for?
We got the Interclub. We got the banquet. We got an ATA shoot that we're probably, there's one I think starts, which for those that don't know, Amateur Trap Shooting Association, but it's called amateur. It's as professional really as you can get. It's the show, the league in our area. It's North American wide. It starts up March 29th, I think is the first, but I have other obligations that I've got committed to that I got to go to. And so I think April, first weekend in April, and we might be April, shooting with sure. You, Bill, hopefully.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm making a plan. My son's got another football tryout for Team Ontario on the 4th in Toronto. But after that, I've committed to going down. I think it's in London or some Crumlin? No.
It could be Crumlin.
I'm not sure where it is. It could be. But on the 5th, there's definitely one year area, and I'm going to be there.
That one's it's either Oxford. I think it's either Oxford or it's Otter Valley.
Yeah, one of the two. Yeah, I'm hoping to get out a few times before that. Obviously, what we were just talking about, and, you know, I mean, I'm not expecting a ton other than to get out there and get back into the competition mode and be setting the standard and seeing what you guys are doing. Hopefully, Todd doesn't blow us out of the water too bad. But
please.
Oh, it's gonna happen
with my chirping.
I know it is.
With my chirping.
I know it is.
With my social, my sociality.
Throwing shotgun shells at me when I miss targets or something.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Not at an ATA shoot. I wouldn't do that. Oh, that's awesome. No, we got that. Then we're going into trout season. Our one day of family fun time on the stream of brown trouting that we talked about there. And then we're turkey hunting.
Awesome. And we're turkey hunting.
And we're turkey hunting. Yeah, we might have to get you down to come hunt with us, Bill.
That'd be awesome.
And yeah. It would be. Agreed.
Yeah, it'd be good. We can get down there and like to see how you guys do it.
Yeah, I'm trying so hard to get
all these birds.
Yeah, we'll bump it up now. We'll take Bill to some other spot. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't know what happened. I've been trying. I want so bad to get a doubleheader with Dad. We've had it so many times where they've come in and one will hang up and end up getting Dad to shoot one, or I'll shoot one and we both don't get the shot off, that now I so bad want a doubleheader with Dad. So I sit with Dad quite a bit. And then opening morning, Scotty goes and sits on his own and usually will come over carrying his bird and come hang with us after he's already
shot. I join up with you. Even if I don't, I join up with you and shoot the afternoon with you or whatever. Right?
And it's not often you don't.
Yeah, sometimes.
Usually you quit bird in morning. Hand.
I'm open and open in the morning. My brother asked if I'd go down and hunt with him in the St. Catharines area, that way where he is. But he's got a farm that he deer hunts on that holds a pile of turkeys, he says. So, yeah, he'd asked if I come down help, because he's never really turkey hunted outside of hunting with me, and I don't have a ton of stuff, but I've got enough that I can hold my own and show him. And a good buddy of ours at deer hunts, TJ, has never turkey hunted before. So it'd be nice to take the two kind of newbies out and show him, you know, the almost way of getting turkeys.
And bring them into the almost, guys. You just shot one. You're out of the club.
Yeah,
take
you're
your
out.
Bird and get out.
You're one and done. I hope you learned something. Yeah,
that's one less for us to almost shoot.
Yeah. The new guy, TJ's got pretty good luck. First year he was deer hunting, he shot two deer on his first week out, right?
Oh, there's. See, I have no respect for those guys. Scotty, was that your mouth call?
What was that?
Was that your mouth call?
No, I didn't hear a thing.
I believe that. You're part deaf. Is that your mouth call?
Yeah, that's my mouth call.
That's not too shabby at all.
That's not bad.
See, I've never even heard of him. I didn't even know he had mouth calls. Hunted with him for what, 20-something years? I don't even know he got mouth calls.
Yeah, too funny.
My gosh. Right on. Your turn, Bill.
It's on the box here.
Hey, I got another one. I got the Screaming Eagle or whatever it is. Here's one that's loud as heck. Oh, yeah. I got to put you on speakerphone for this one.
Oh, great. That's what we need to hear.
That one's loud. You can't make that one quiet.
That's good. I like that.
That one needs a little bit of work.
Is that Bill? That wasn't too shabby.
That's Bill.
I'm sitting at my computer, and guys, I don't have a mouth call sitting. I can't even join
What's
in.
The matter with you?
Right? I can try just with my... Well, that was a little high pitched.
Yeah, it's a little bit high pitched.
What was that?
I haven't. That's my box call, but I haven't chalked it in a year. It
sounded like Beaker. I'm watching the kids watching the Muppets up there. What's going on?
That's the next thing. We're traveling up down the highway, practicing mouth calls and good deal. So,
nope.
That's it for me.
Right on. Well. Alrighty, until next week, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall?
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.